firstly, can you explain to us a little bit more about, well, this call, what this call is aiming for and how you're going about it?
Yes, of course. Well, three of us who are all professors, all women, coordinated a couple of national open letters to all the governments in Australia, pulling together all the research on the risks to prisoners and people who work in prisons and how those risks can affect the wider community and what ought to be done about that, how we can change the risk with proper information and monitoring and release of prisoners.
Have you seen...
Now, yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, have you seen much of a reaction to the call so far?
Well, I think it's quite interesting. We had two replies from government, from the NT and the ACT. The other governments don't appear to have replied yet. The correction services in all the areas are putting some information on their website. But for my part, as far as I can tell, there hasn't been a specific response to the expert information that was in those letters. Now, what's important is those letters, there were two national open letters that were signed by 400 experts in the area. So what you've got is a team of, if you want to talk about Team Australia, there's a team of 400 people out there who can assist governments in how to respond. And unfortunately, corrections, I've checked the Victorian website this morning, that's been updated with some measures as from the 6th of April. But the first letter we sent out was, I think, the 22nd of March. So it's perfectly obvious that there really was no preparation or planning for a pandemic that was known about. And that type of planning would include releasing people who are particularly vulnerable, particularly Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people, elderly people, women, pregnant women, children, people with very little to go on their sentences. And if you prepare and plan with the idea that you're going to protect the rights to life and health of everybody, then those letters were really sensible suggestions based on long-term research about what corrections and governments can do. And unfortunately, my view is that the response is too slow and not sufficiently comprehensive.
So I presume the idea isn't just sort of to whip open all the cells and say, go home, lads. I mean, what would the plan actually look like in terms of these released prisoners?
Well, if we're just talking about release, bear in mind that my view is you have to have information and monitoring and release. So there's a lot that needs to be done. But yes, absolutely. You're not just saying open the doors and everybody run away. What you do is you have strategic planning. Now, one of the things that has been suggested, and I know there's been further letters to attorneys general, is to set up task force that include experts. So you have a task force, say, what do we need to do for this prison? How many prisoners have we got? How long are they in for? Are they vulnerable? Do they have other health issues? There's some organisation that can be done. Have we supplied these people with the sorts of public health measures that the World Health Organization is telling us we need? So if we think about people, for example, who have come back from abroad on aeroplanes and we've put them in quarantine for 14 days, what sort of services they've been provided with? Have we got the similar facilities for feeding and health and so forth in the prisons? If not, what do we need to do for those particular prisoners? Now, for another example, yesterday, the omnibus bill in Victoria brought in laws whereby children can be isolated by way of regulation for 14 days in a locked room. Now, of itself, for my part, that sounds terrible. Isolating a child, particularly a child in a youth detention centre, is abhorrent. Now, we might need to isolate a child who is showing symptoms of COVID-19. We might need to test those children. But in what circumstances are we doing that? And have we got the experts in on gender, race, LGBTQI issues? Are we prioritising those people to an extent that we may not need to isolate them. We simply need to provide the sorts of public health measures that you do as a reaction for the whole of humanity.
Mm.
And not everybody who's in prison is in prison for really serious crime. Nobody's suggesting that every prisoner needs to be released. But if you have a sensible plan that involves the sort of information that I'm talking about, that will involve the release of people in suitable and managed ways to suitable and managed environments. So, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer to think about what would you like yourself if you were locked in a hotel room in quarantine when you've come back on an aeroplane, or if you were stuck on a cruise ship, which is like a floating prison. What would you need to ensure your own rights to life and health? And why shouldn't that be applied to children, having regard to their own particular vulnerabilities? Yeah, so I think that's really the approach that governments and corrections should be taking.
Mm. And just as a final point, I mean, assuming they do not go with this kind of measure, the measures we currently have in place within the system, how might they be built upon or improved, you know, without saying, well, we're going towards release?
I think the major problem is overcrowding. And what do you do with when you've got overcrowding? What do you do when people can't practice social distancing? The second major problem is that it's well known that people who are in prison have other vulnerabilities, other health issues, including mental health issues. So this is a long-term problem whereby we warehouse people who are often very vulnerable. You might have someone who's been the victim of human trafficking to commit crime, who's been coerced to commit crime, who has mental health problems, who suffers from fetal alcohol syndrome, all of these health issues that we know about in the prison environment. And what you've got here on top of all of that is a global pandemic. So whilst corrections are, if you like, doing their best, in my opinion, their best isn't good enough, because what you've got to think about is we're asking those people who work in prisons to go in and out every day to a place that is a massive potential risk for a cluster of infection. Now, the fact that there hasn't been in that particular prison an outbreak doesn't mean that the measures that have been taken are good enough. So I think one of the major problems to come back to is information and monitoring, because you get one message on the website, so we're doing our best and these are the measures we're taking. They can phone their families more, which is good. But you get another message from prisoners who are fearful and saying that they're not separate and they're locked in for 23 hours a day and exercise isn't meaningful and fresh air isn't meaningful and food isn't suitable. So information and monitoring is really important, because if you have independent people being able to monitor, then you might find out exactly what needs to be done in any particular prison. Now, it's perfectly plain that people are being moved to different prisons all over various states and territories, but moving people isn't necessarily the simple answer. And there's such an awful lot of research about how to respond to these, to vulnerability of itself, that really having task forces to make sure that there's a humanitarian approach to places in detention is a bit of a no-brainer.
Mm. Well, Felicity, we will have to leave it there, but thank you very much. Do appreciate your time on the program this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.